Yeah, it's been a busy few weeks.
Yeah. Remember that family emergency I told you about last time?
Yeah.
My brother had his gallbladder removed. He had to have an emergency surgery.
Oh. Do they know what the cause was?
It's just stopped working, and there was a blockage in his bile ducts. Oof. And it almost affected his liver function. So they had to go in and get it out. And there was like abscess in it, and it was sick.
He's pretty young, isn't he?
Yeah, he's 35.
Jeez.
And it happened so fast. His surgery is supposed to be scheduled for the end of July, but they had to rush him into emergency, like, to get it done, because it was going to just, I guess, explode. I don't know. But
it's sort of good it happened sooner rather than later with the hospital situation. I mean, not to...
Exactly, yeah.
Not to minimize that at all, but in a true sense of, as you've seen, maybe actually before we even talk about hospitals, the vaccine presser, let's start there, because it's been just over a week since the vaccine presser. That was on July 8th, where Dix reappeared. And before I dive into my thoughts about it, I thought I would ask you how you felt about the vaccine presser.
Confusion, right? Like, there's so much confusion out there right now. Like, at first, people were booking right away. Everyone was getting accepted. And now I'm hearing reports that people are being discouraged from getting their fourth booster because they're being told if they go ahead and get their fourth booster, they may not qualify for the updated one in the fall. Like, there's going to be some sort of penalty. I'm like, what? Well, how is this public health?
They won't call it a penalty, of course, but so definitely the thing that came out. So there's been continued pressure across the provinces in Canada to release the fourth dose is like the best way to put it. A lot of people just feel like they're being held hostage at this point because across the country, right, many healthcare workers too and others were prioritized for vaccination at some level. So many of them have run out of fourth doses at this point. They're past the six-month mark. Myself, the 21st will be my 6 months since my last dose. And there's been little to no plans about what's going to happen. So Dix came out after there's sort of been this increasing pressure for fourth doses to be released and like pretty much tried to state that people should not get their fourth dose right now, that the plan for BC is really to have the fourth dose occur in the fall, in September, when they step up vaccinations like every year, but that they would allow people to call in if they thought that they should have the fourth dose or were anxious, you know, as they like to use that word. So you're correct in that. As soon as that happened, A, there was mass confusion about whether it was even to call in right away or whether there were going to be these weird mass invites that were happening 40,000 at a time. But initially they're letting everybody book, like you said, but now that people have booked, they're sort of telling people, you know, when they come in to get it, like maybe they should wait and trying to like discourage them essentially from actually getting that fourth booster. And Dix did make it very clear in the presser, regardless of whether the new Omicron-based vaccine is sort of developed or variant-based development of vaccines, that sort of said BC will make you wait 6 months regardless, right? Doesn't matter what group you're from, you're going to be waiting 6 months. As part of this sort of push to get people to defer till fall. So, yeah, I feel like you called it directly in what you said, is that it led to this mass confusion. And Mel, my humble opinion, so let's not say that I ever think I'm right in any of this, so I'll just share what I have been thinking about when I consider this situation, is that In September, they've often shifted this mass redeployment of staff in order to have these vaccination clinics, often wavering with the testing people and then the sort of frontline care. So they've been redeploying people constantly, but we're at the point we don't have that anymore. Like we said so, right? So they don't have enough people to vaccinate right now, I don't think, Mel. I think that this probably, the wave of people that came in that wanted their fourth doses was larger than they expected. And they likely don't have enough people simply to vaccinate. And they can't start vaccine clinics right now, regardless of the demand. So they're trying to slow it down in any way they can. They simply don't have the people. What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, like last weekend, the Langley Event Center was open for any walk-in, for anyone 18 plus who wanted a booster to get it. And that was fantastic, right? Anyone who wants to come in, walk in, get it, bam. But I think you hit it right on the nose. The demand was much more than they anticipated, and they simply don't have the logistics down to be able to deliver for the demand that they're getting. And I don't think it's like, right, we don't have enough doses.
Where are they going to pull from?
Exactly.
Pull from right now? They can't pull from anywhere, because whether it's laboratories, whether it's hospitals, whether it's urgent care clinics, whether it's GP clinics right now, there are not enough people. So they can't pull anybody for vaccination right now is what I would suspect.
Right. And it's not that there's a lack of dosages. Like, for crying out loud, we were just going to throw away 275,000 doses, right?
And I still don't have a firm grip of like how fast we're actually going to be able to vaccinate. And again, it's very obscure and difficult to find in BC what the hell's happening. Until they decide to sort of do one of their really, really terrible slide sets, which are just, I get very upset at them. It would be so easy to make them much more palpable to the population, and nobody is even trying. But yeah, I think that the need probably far superseded the people that they have. So that's going to become obvious, which it is now, because they're trying to slow down people getting the vaccine.
What they need to do is stop the gatekeeping. Like, why can't you just give it to the pharmacies and people can book it with their local pharmacists?
Right.
Why,
and instead of
what's wrong with that? Like, everywhere else is doing that.
Well, and this is where the 6-month interval comes in, because BC has had this dose interval experiment, as we know, which they wrote a paper on without asking us or letting us consent to having a 6-month interval, in contrast to what many other places did. If the research shows that we can have the updated vaccine 4 months after, there's no reason why BC should be able to stop us from doing so. It's especially for compromised groups, for all those sorts of individuals or healthcare workers, right? Like, How is it possible that we're in this position where they're going to do something like that? But Mel, I believe that they would, right?
But that should be like a class action human rights issue, because honestly, you're right. There is no scientific reason for the 6-month delay. It is only arbitrarily imposed upon us in BC simply because of someone's study that none of us consented to. Right. If the rest of the world is delivering you the fourth dose after 4 months, right, and there's a need and a demand for it right now because we're in the height of the 7th wave, like, why the hell are we still following this stupid arbitrary rule that nowhere else in the rest of the world is applying, and like, literally lives are on the line, and like, why there is not more discussion or outcry about this is beyond me. Like, are we really that beat down? Have we really become that docile and we have been that beaten down that, well, we no longer are able to voice our demands like this?
I think the fourth dose, actually, we've seen quite a push across provinces that maybe has been more of a coordinated effort than I've seen in a while in terms of one topic being addressed so quickly. Correct. BC were just losing the most. Well, that's actually not true, because even Alberta now, I can't right now I cannot get my fourth dose as a healthcare worker or someone with an autoimmune disease because I don't fall into the clinically extremely vulnerable, and healthcare workers don't qualify anymore, even if you're at that 6 month dose right now. They've only got age restrictions or certain vulnerabilities, so I can't get it at all.
That's terrible. I'm so sorry to hear that. I mean, your last layer and only defense you have now is literally physics, is protect your eyes and wear a mask, right? Wear a respirator, and that's it. That's all you can do.
And that's what I am doing, right? Like, I'm still one of the only people in the hospital I'm in that wears N99 quality, and that was what I'm wearing. And we've now gone back to, with AHS, to the original visitor policies within the hospital. So it's sort of free-for-all now, so there's no tracking of sort of who's coming and going within these wards, which BC, of course, is likely going to be closer or not to that soon, because despite the fact that they seem to have such different external representations of the provinces, Alberta and BC have pulled quite similar bullshit across the pandemic.
They're still handing out baggy blue surgical masks to visitors going to places like where there's like a cancer clinic or a breast cancer clinic. Like they're right. Like, here, trade in your far more right. your superior mask for this inferior one. Good luck.
We have a human rights complaint that's been said that it is a problem and our public health won't even address it. Like, it's completely, let alone that we saw Dr. LaVoy come out for this vaccination plan too, right? I mean, I have heard Henry's on vacation. That's the most I've heard. It would be nice to hear when she gets back, if that's a thing, because we haven't heard anything to that regard. We know we have an acting PHO right now, but we've heard nothing else. And this man just came and spouted the same crap. So he came and said he was acting in place of Dr. Henry, and said that the priority was going to continue to be protecting people from illness and death. Mel. Also protecting the healthcare system. Really? I mean, keeping people safe. And let's hear the last one.
Be kind to each other.
No, it's even better now. We have
what is
protecting
it?
People from illness and death. Protecting the healthcare system. Keeping people safe. And let's put it out to the last one that is always the most important. Socializing.
What?
That is now one of our major goals. And public health said they're keeping their eyes on the key factors such as variants and transmissibility, hospitalizations, case rates, outbreaks and clusters, and what's happening elsewhere, as well as intervals between doses. Really? You think they're paying attention to that, Mel?
Oh, hey, what's our monkeypox numbers right now, Crystal? Socializing is one of the, you know, top priorities.
Okay, so 10 days ago on July 5th, the July 5th data, we had 4 cases of monkeypox. As of the July 15th, we had 32. So we're doing excellently with regards to this.
Yikes.
We are, you know, the winners, as always. But we, within Canada, are up to 539 monkeypox cases now. Alberta's up to 12 cases. British Columbia has 32. Ontario has 194. And then Quebec has 299. And then Saskatchewan came out swinging today with 2 cases. So it's been
yikes.
The tracker now.
And you hear about the UK publishing that they found community transmission in the schools with monkeypox. Okay, so guys, this is not a gay disease. I just want it on record right now. Project Canary does not believe this is a disease that is directed towards, you know, whether you are homosexual or heterosexual. Guys,
well, and this is the problem.
It's airborne.
They had this, once again, super restrictive definition that they went with to try and get the target priorities there, but they did it in such an irresponsible way by not addressing the fact that everybody is also at risk, right? And they also just targeted men, which is...
Yes.
Actually,
gay men.
Fine if they're going to target for vaccination, but they, even in their attempts to do this, disacknowledge the fact that some bisexual men have sex with women that also need to get the vaccine and get tested and still have been unable to do so because of that. So they were just incapable of even trying to do what they tried to do. I mean, we're seeing a lot of cases of monkeypox. What am I going to say? You know, I saw a kid wandering the other day and sitting on a bench that had some sort of pox. Just had yikes. Pox and was just sitting on the bench.
And some poxy like, child.
Okay. I guess that's where I'm at.
Oh my goodness. It's the plague.
Well, nobody seems that concerned. I hear, and I don't know if it's just like people not wanting to deal with some of those outcomes, but like a lot of people with that like post-nasal drip, like throat clearing, like long COVID stuff, right? After having an infection and mm-hmm. and people are back at work just like coughing all over and not wearing masks.
And they're like, oh no, it's just a cold or it's just allergies.
Nobody's testing anymore. No. And Alberta just made its testing even more restrictive again. Yikes. So it's going in the same vein as BC did, and now putting it on that sort of treatment focus where it's stating, if we think it's going to change the outcome for you, then we may provide you the testing, which has worked great, as we can see, right?
But you know what? It's like a double-edged sword. Did you see all those reports that came out a couple weeks ago? I think we were in between recordings, and people couldn't get insurance now because they have record in their medical record due to a PCR test of having tested positive for COVID. And so now they can't get insurance.
Yeah, like, it's all what? Over the place. So yeah, like lots of places aren't looking at that yet, but I've definitely seen cases of insurance agencies explicitly asking questions now about your previous cases of COVID or whether you've been hospitalized, ventilated, all those sorts of questions. So yeah, I mean, as the research comes out more and more about the actual effects of COVID, and we're sort of retrospectively assessing the disability that we've sort of put on people, part of that dissection is also going to be, is going to just be that, right, of what we sort of missed in wanting to push forward.
I just don't think we as a whole have any idea what's coming our way down the pipe, because this is, it's going to keep snowballing and snowballing, right? We're hearing people getting mass disabled from COVID, and you know, studies that are coming out that every time you catch COVID, it increases your chances of developing long COVID and becoming more debilitated. And there's
the dissonance is at yes. such a peak right now of the people yes. that want to believe it's over, that it's like dangerous for people that are just trying to keep themselves safe, right? Like, was just grabbing a coffee the other day with my husband and had our masks on in our car because we put our masks on when we go through the drive-thru. There was a man that came out who literally just started screaming at us at the top of his lungs that
what?
Masks are over and like we need to stop wearing them. And it was, I'm just like, what is happening inside people's brains when that is happening, right?
But to have such a visceral reaction just to see someone in masks tells you a lot of what's going on. Like,
let me juxtaposition that with one of the things Adrian Dix said on that July 8th presser, which was, or LaVoie maybe, over the last few weeks, we have seen that increase in hospitalizations. The virus continues to circulate. So we want to be clear, the pandemic is not over. The number of cases and the number of people in hospital go up and down, and we will continue to see that. That is expected. Mel.
I know. I don't know.
They then followed that stating that we see that those highest at risk and dying are 80+, and elevated risk is 70 to 79. Those are the people going to hospital and the ones dying. In the fall, COVID's going to go up. So they say all this with the context of those older people dying as if, A, it doesn't matter, right? Like, just don't care, apparently, that we're having these large numbers of our elders die. But also, the question was asked in this context, and I don't know if you caught the questions at this presser, but it was asked, you know, you've said that the vulnerable are dying, that our elders are dying, that these people are dying, you know, what concrete action can be taken to, you know, lower that when we have all these tools available? And LaVoy's answer was, well, there are no other tools that we will use. We are vaccinating.
Yeah, they are a one-trick pony. They have not diverged from their vaccine-only strategy, right? We know we need vaccine plus, and that's plus NPIs. But they're not doing it. So, you know, really, I think everyone should be screaming on the top of lungs, what are you guys doing with all the billions we got from the feds for upgrading the ventilation systems in our public schools for our teachers and our kids? And yet, you have stuck to your guns to this vaccine-only strategy. So what are you guys going to do with that funding then?
But not only not only stuck to this vaccine-only strategy, but did a shit poor job of it in terms of kids, right? Because they pushed for so long.
Yeah.
Right? Like, our premier himself said kids don't get COVID and then wouldn't take it back. They embedded this sort of parents not wanting to vaccinate their children, and now we're seeing that play out in the vaccination rates when it comes to you know, those second and third doses, if not even the first doses, right? So it's, we did a vaccine only strategy, but then we sort of collapsed the own strategy there, and now when it comes to fourth doses and the third doses, actually they did the same crap, right? Mm-hmm. And ended up doing it too late. So they've muffled the only strategy they have. We're paying for it, right? Like, we see the excess data rates. We see the numbers that are coming out of Moriarty's data. BC is often on the highest of those sorts of rates of sort of disability and death outcomes, right? And this is the exact reason for that, along with what's happening to our healthcare system now, which is in free fall.
It makes you wonder, like, do we even have the capacity to inoculate the kids that are now approved for 6 months to 5 years old
from
Moderna?
Know.
Like,
when do the kid vaccinations open? August?
I believe so.
I wonder if that's why BC is trying to wait till September, is because they know they're definitely not going to have enough people if they're trying to vaccinate kids as well.
Well, they have to, because now parents are going to be demanding it too, right? Because they finally got what they asked for. Health Canada finally approved Moderna. Yay, right? Mm-hmm. That was a good day, but, like, my goodness.
We're going to see in the weeks to come, I guess, in terms of how many are actually getting vaccinated. But this is the part where it would be nice to have any sort of data.
Yeah, they don't do data, right? They hide it. Because people like you and I look at it. They don't like it.
Which does, you know, which maybe I'll sort of slide to that sort of topic of finally had the article that I've been working on with CBC News.
Yes, congratulations.
With the reporter Akshay, and releasing sort of the data that I've been collecting on the hospital closures in particular. So I made contact with him almost 5 weeks ago now. So we've been talking and sort of building this on and off since then, when I first started the tracker, and been just sort of verifying the data and getting everything in there before the article came out. And it did come out, which is great. That was today. And it sort of said that the data is verified, which makes me super happy, because now I have that article sort of on the website. But it also utilized this data to show what is happening within the healthcare system, which is the exact reason why I started this webpage, was that we need it to be easily accessible. We need to be able to have our journalists and reporters have access to this data and be able to understand it. Actually made use of this data in such a way that it was able to do that and sort of show how much the rural hospitals have been hit. And Merlin, the mayor of Clearwater, was also sort of in the article, who I've been talking with more in the last week or two, of Clearwater, who has been dealing with those closures in the hospital there in Clearwater just over and over and over again, especially within the last, like, 2 to 3 weeks. Because we see rurals given out, right? That's where the fault lines are turning into gaping holes, unfortunately.
I'd really love to hear from him about, like, what's happening over there right now and what the situation is like, because the amount of hours the ER has been shut on his community, like, I just can't imagine what the impacts are like. And I think the lack of voice that they have is disturbing, right? The lack, not only the lack of representation in our government, but the lack of voice, that people are not more aware that this is happening in their community.
Yeah, and I know he took a break from Twitter for a little bit a few weeks ago, and I know it's been hard for their hospital too to deal with the media coverage as it's come in the last few weeks, because a lot of the people there are like holding it together with duct tape, right? Like, they are putting in all these extra shifts and like trying to keep it open as many hours as they can. As you can imagine, the people that are left there are the people that have been struggling through and trying to keep it going. So they're, you know, bearing a lot of the burden when it comes to these things. And it's hard when, like, where is anybody within our health system, right? Like, talking about what's genuinely going to happen with this. Like, Clearwater was closed again yesterday. You know, that's like 23 closures since like the beginning of April for that hospital. Ashcroft was closed all through the weekend this weekend instead of having services throughout the weekend. And then Port McNeil closed as well again today. My sister lives out there in terms of the North Island. So we're seeing these rural hospitals close, right? And as the article talked about as well, when we think about the diversion, so Port McNeil, the hospital that's currently closed, the closest ER is 41 kilometers away. If we look at Ashcroft, which is closed all this weekend, the nearest hospital is 93 kilometers away. If we look at Clearwater, the nearest hospital is 124 kilometers away, right? And then the Chetwynd Hospital in Mackenzie, which has had a bunch of closures, not recently, but throughout the last sort of year, that's 177 kilometers to the nearest hospital. Tell me how this is a functioning healthcare system.
It's not. This is our hospital systems and healthcare system crumbling. It's collapsing. That's what it looks like.
Right. And people think it's going to be in this like one big fell swoop. And this is just not the way things collapse, right? We've talked about that before. And we're going to see the closures escalate. And we talked about rural places being hit first. And this is exactly what is happening right now, is the rural places are being hit first, and we're starting to see the escalation of those things because they cannot retain workers now, right? Like, they are losing senior people who have like this extensive, rich, lived experiences within these workplaces that I can't imagine the sort of generational abilities and skills that we're losing with the people that we're losing. So then we have people that aren't sort of that weathered in those, that are coming into these just terrible situations of work, getting burned out so quickly, and then sort of not staying in those positions. And then we're getting less and less skilled people, not in terms of not enough skilled, but in terms of that, you know, when you've been working 30 years versus 5 years and what you understand about the job. And that's what's happening in healthcare right now. And it's
and education.
Concerning. Yeah, and across, I would say, almost all sort of spectrums of employment right now, but particularly those that are bearing the brunt of the pandemic and have had no reprieve, including those sort of essential workers, retail workers. Brian, sorry, somebody on Twitter gave me shit because, did you see the person who yelled at me because I didn't make posts about retail workers because I say essential workers, and then they yelled at me. Shouting out retail workers for Brian. Teachers and healthcare workers, all those sorts of often female-led and lower-income jobs, custodial jobs, all those sorts of things, right, where team management and, like, all that facilitation of that work is really benefited by having those experienced workers, but we're losing that. And It's not just going to stay rural, right? Like, it's just it starts in rural because that's where the fault lines were. But we'll see it sort of creep into the Vancouver areas and those sorts of things. And we've seen that start to happen in some of the clinics. And, you know, if it, even if it goes the way that the actual government is stating it's going to go, which is in fall, we're going to see another wave and increases of cases, that I don't understand who they think's going to sustain that wave, right? In terms of healthcare, I don't understand what they think's going to happen.
There's going to be such gaps of knowledge that they're going to have a serious mentoring challenge on their hands. Like mentorship and knowledge transfer and skills transfers. It's going to be so difficult and challenging for them in the next 5 years. This is my prediction. I mean, have you taken a look at the amount of jobs that are posted right now? Have you looked at the data? Like, there's so many positions
This is the funny
everywhere.
part, right? This is the funny part. If you listen to the sort of juxtaposition of some of the like financial economic versus like the healthcare systemic sort of stuff that they'll push so hard. You've seen John Horgan do this at like lowest unemployment rates ever. We're doing the best we've ever done. And then it's like the opposite of that with these like mass staff shortages everywhere and all those sorts of things, right? And they refuse to sort of recognize the issues that come with those specific working populations and to address them. So it just keeps getting worse and worse and worse.
When do you think would be the inflection point where there'll be just a reckoning? Since it's coming soon, it feels like we're teetering right on that precipice.
The problem is, I feel like we're teetering on the precipice of our healthcare system really being impaired past the point. Like, I'm worried we're going to close rural hospitals. Like, that's my fear, right? Is they're going to close somewhere like Clearwater and redeploy the people out and just say, like, this is what we have to do, this is where we're at, instead of actually dealing with the causes of why that's happening and looking at different solutions. And yeah, I worry that it's less about a reckoning and more of we're going to see the transition point of it getting not the nicest, right? As the vaccines aren't, we're not able to distribute them very well. If we do have another wave and the healthcare system sort of can't sustain it, and we see our wait times creep up even further than they are and all those sorts of things, right? Like we see a case recently in the last week or two out of New Brunswick, I believe, where someone died in the emergency department waiting room, right? And those sorts of situations are gonna hit the healthcare workers really hard again too, right? If you think about that in terms of if they get in a position where another wave comes and they're trying to sustain these positions that they're now almost 2.5, 3 years into. And the world around them is not even wanting to do basic things to assist them, right? It's going to be hard for them to not give up.
Did you see that report that came out of, well, of course, from Alberta? You must have seen it.
Yeah, the school
How about
one.
the school one? Like that is earth-shattering that they
Remind me of the
knew.
findings now.
They knew that schools field transmission and that schools were going to be drivers of more infections in the community, and yet they still went ahead and kept schools open,
Well,
right?
and not only that, but there was a specific experiment that ended up working its way into the Alberta data because they still collected it, but some schools had masking mandates and some did not. And those schools with the masking, or those schools without the masking mandates, had 3 times higher rates of the COVID infections, which is a very clear sort of indicator of how one of the layers is working if you let it work.
That masks work, yeah. So maybe we should bring back a masking mandate for the fall,
But that's
guys.
because Alberta had collected all the data, right? Versus BC that put out the study on the very limited data from the school district that had all the things, and then applied that to everybody and used the data before all of the children got hit in that wave of March to May 2021.
I don't know. I just think every DPAC and every parent should be screaming, you know, asking for a mask mandate to be brought back this fall, because gosh, guys, we don't know when those new vaccines are going to come out, and we don't know if we now have the people to be able to administer them to all of us in time, right? Like, let's try to get all the layers back while we still can, because September is not going to be pretty. Really, it's not.
Well, yeah, I just don't, and the data that's coming out from all over in terms of sort of our immune systems, and what does this mean in terms of deficits for our immune systems, and the sicknesses we're seeing come out otherwise, like, I don't know, we're seeing a lot of reports of hand, foot, and mouth disease everywhere right now, which, you know, we'll see if it's hand, foot, and mouth disease.
Or maybe it's something else. Unfortunately. Yeah, it's some other rash.
But I wouldn't guess that we are not going to see sort of stuff like that. We've seen that we saw those peaks of RSV and stuff as well with children. And it's good that we have the vaccines coming for the kiddos, but it's like, how fast will they get vaccinated? And the variant spread, right? Like, the amount of information COVID has on us is just, it's astronomical what it can do with it, right? In terms of variants. And we've had this really weird, and we talked about it way in the beginning too. Mm-hmm. It makes me so mad is that Henry particularly too leaned into this explanation that, you know, well, viruses almost always will get less severe, right? That they'll pretty much always get less severe. So even if it becomes more transmissible, we don't have to worry about it. And that's sort of what they built front end into this explanation of the, and yes, Cindy, oh yes, Cindy, that they started from the beginning with this. And so that has just built up over time. And that's sort of, and even the media has fed into that, right, of talking about how it's increased transmissibility, but not more severe, which Omicron turned out to not even be true when you looked at it over the longer term of the wave, right? And it's frustrating because that's just not true now. I mean, in many cases, does it get less severe? Sure. Does it mean it can't get more severe? No.
Then she failed to mention that part.
And us giving it literally every variation possible of every possible stuff on Earth probably wasn't the best bet for decreasing the chances of that thing happening, right?
Well, R naught.
Why
right now is
the
18.
Control of transmissibility, everybody cared about it, right? This is why so many of us were talking about controlling that transmissibility, was to not give it our entire genetic code that it can then decide to F with us in some other way, which, you know, we're seeing these explanations potentially of some of the new variants going back into that lung area, right? That it's mm-hmm. going to sort of start molding back into that. And God knows what else it's going to do other parts of the world, because it's brewing all sorts of things. I've been looking at the graphs of the genetic stuff, and it's like, wow. When you look at the graphs from like 18 months ago to now, you're like, what we've done? Wow.
Yeah.
Right? It's, we've mostly lost control of it.
Complete capitulation, I think is the word. We've decided just to pretend it's over and resume normal and open air travel everywhere and open restaurants.
If you look at the most recent sort of COVID data in BC, right? You know, it's the hospitalizations are creeping up again. So on the data that came out from the report on July 14th, you know, we saw the in-hospital was up to 426 again. So that's, again, back to April levels. So we've done the same thing we've done every wave in BC, which is so, again, makes me so furious because they embedded this into the very beginning. This was Henry's flattening the curve. So Henry She always used that in this way that she meant plateauing, right? That we were not growing anymore in cases, but that we plateaued, which we have done across the waves, but we plateaued at exceptionally high levels and then started our waves at those high levels. So it just got like terrible across these other waves. So we've looked at these persistently high levels of hospitalization now for the 6 months. Whereas if you look at, you know, 2020 and 2021 in comparison to what we've allowed in the last 6 months, it's often higher in these months of 2022, what's actually happening. And, you know, the deaths that we're having is still happening. Right.
And, you know, when I try to tell people, like, hey, you know, 47 people died last week, like, they don't. No clue.
Right.
Like,
right. Because if we just look at the data from, let's see, July 2nd. So we had one death in ages 20 to 29, two deaths in age 50 to 59, five deaths in 60 to 69, nine deaths in 70 to 79, 14 deaths in 80 to 89, and six deaths in 90 plus. That's 1 week of data. Right. And those are low numbers. Those are some of the lower numbers we've had. And the data's been a little weird the last 2 weeks, so we'll see what shakes out in the next couple reports, right? But that's just 1 week of data, and that's sort of the backdated info that's in there. And these numbers add up, right? We're at the point where we're having, you know, 5 to 7 individuals dying of COVID a day and 5 to 7 individuals dying of overdose a day, or toxicity of the drugs. Sure, we're gonna add climate change on there, I'm sure too. We'll be okay with, you know, 5 heat deaths or 5 freezing deaths a day. It's just they normalize the deaths, right? We talked about this all along.
They've habituated
and they
us.
Did that, and that's what Lavoie went up and did there. Mm-hmm. On the July 8th presser, he literally said, you know, those at risk are 80 plus or 70 to 79. Those are the people that are having the problems, and like, we're not going to do more outside of vaccinate anymore. Right? As if that doesn't count. Right?
Can you imagine being a 79-year-old?
One of those deaths.
Yeah.
Right? My grandpa, who's trying to live out his life after losing her in such a terrible way, while this government refused to do anything to help them, is now, you know, stuck in a position where he feels like nobody cares if he dies, if he's just a cost of going to the beach now.
That's horrible.
Right? That worked, that lived in BC his entire life, that worked in the BCN system his entire life as a janitor, right? My grandma worked at Canada Post in BC their entire married life together, 50 years. And the last 3 years has them just been told like nobody cares about them, and how many of our seniors are like that right now?
It's shameful.
It is. You know, we have outbreaks in long-term care still happening, right? Like, that's one of the things I still track on the website. One of the things in the long-term care directory is outbreaks. And we have, you know, one that was declared as of July 14th at Millsite Lodge and Interior Health. Another one July 11th, St. Charles Manor on Island Health. July 10th, active outbreak, the Heights at Island Health. Active outbreak, influenza, Chartwell Carlton and Fraser Health, right? Like, these things are still happening, and we're not even doing minimum protection measures, such as having these individuals wear N95 quality masks at work.
Have they improved their ventilation and filtration? Highly doubt it, right? Like, I mean, we were told, what, at the last heat dome that 40 degrees in the LTC home was acceptable? Like, really?
Yeah. Yeah, and then Horgan came out and called air conditioners essential and still let us come into heated times without doing things like, I don't know, why don't all publicly funded government buildings have air conditioning then, like long-term care, right? In the interior, why is it not that every sort of long-term care in the interior region where it's so hot has air conditioning? But that's not part of the plan, even though he called it essential. Right, that when Horgan is out there asking for all this money from Trudeau, a lot of us are so angry about it because we know that that's not going to help our community. Right? We've seen the money disappear, and we know that they're not interested in being N95 masks to our long-term care workers, in improving ventilation in our hospitals. We know they're not interested in doing those things because we've watched it for years now. So why would we cheer on Horgan asking for money when we know it's not going to do a damn thing for us? Right? They are still ignoring the outcomes of Little Mountain Place and the report on that long-term care. Right? They haven't changed or addressed any of those things that came out of it. And our Minister of Health is aware of hospital systems collapsing. Came out in answer today, right? Interior Health answered this article that actually worked on with my data, and in response to asking like, what are you doing specifically to helping these rural places, was like, well, we're trying to hire so diversions don't happen. There are solutions everywhere I look, right? I know so many people that offer solutions and beautiful ideas, but they don't want them. And that's what I don't know what to do with right now. And I think that's where the, you know, so many people have felt that burnout phase. It's like, it feels like we have such simple solutions to some of these things to increase protection in such a dramatic way. And we still see the people in power refusing to use it.
But instead they go on vacation or step down, right? I mean, Who is running BC now? That didn't John Horgan said he was done. That he's
December now was the leadership race.
Oh, it's been postponed to December. That's what happened.
And I think that it's probably the NDP's attempt to do a rebrand after sort of everything that's imploded with healthcare. But it's really just sad that they're nowhere to be seen as this happens with our hospitals, right? That they're not, you know, a lot of people have mentioned, you know, the pots and the pans that happened in the beginning of the pandemic. And it's like, no one is cheering for the healthcare workers that are still there right now, right? Like they're still getting so much shit from people and now getting yelled at about wait lines that they had no part in creating, right? That they've sort of outlasted many of their peers who for very good reasons often have left and are still trying, but they're just caught in this rock in this hard place and still trying to do good with it, right? I think that it's good the data got picked up by CBC, and it sounds like
it's excellent.
It made a bit of an impact on the background from what I've heard in terms of them feeling some pressure from it being sort of documented in such a clear way, right? And that's part of what came through this when actually and I were working on some of the data, because he sent me some that he found while he was looking through the sort of verification for the website, and was so how hard and difficult this information was to find for some of these hospitals and closures. Why is it so hard to find? Right? Why did I make this directory to just like see where the closures are? Like that should be really easy to find.
But I think that's purposeful.
We have people that are showing up to the ER and being told that the ER is not taking patients, right? That should never be happening.
No. Or have right? your entire ER closed for a whole weekend. Like, what?
Well, and you just made this emergency system. Why have we not adapted it to do things like, I don't know, let people know when there's an ER closure and how long it is? Because they don't actually want that documented, no.
Well, probably because they're... got backlash from what they didn't want people to know about, right? Like, well, it was purposeful that they couldn't find the data.
They wouldn't want to do a text alert when every time Clearwater emergency department is closed, because what might you notice, Mel, if there was text every time Clearwater was closed. You might notice how often it's closed.
Yeah.
Right? Like, let me read off in the last little bit. So, the evening of Friday, July 15th until morning of July 16th. Evening of July 13th to 14th, the 12th to 13th, the 10th to 12th, the 7th to 8th, the 2nd to the 3rd. That's just a lie.
Wow. Where do people go there when they need medical help in those times?
Well, Interior Health reminds residents of Clearwater that if they require care while the emergency department is closed, they can call 911. Or they can go to the ER in Royal Inland Hospital in Kamloops or call HealthLink BC at 811 if you're unsure if you need to seek emergency care. So they're supposed to go 93 kilometers over to Kamloops.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's unrealistic, right? And we're going to see people paying the prices. And, you know, I mean, I don't want to poke fun at the situation or even, like, call into question other things. But it concerns me when we know that we're going to be having potentially, you know, these deaths or issues out in BC when care is not there. Well, we already know the issues around our coroner service, particularly in BC, eh?
Is that like a whole can of worms we don't want to even approach? Because,
well, the thing is that as I've sort of been discussing, and there was a podcast actually in the United States recently on Trugal that brought this up, and I was so exhilarated when I heard this, was that they brought up the fact that in most provinces that coroners have to have a medical degree, right? They have to have awareness into physicality, into medical background, that sort of stuff, to be able to diagnose, you know, the death, because they are ruling on the manner of death. But what is the case about BC coroners, Mel?
None of them require medical training?
Correct.
How is that possible? There is no official
training required.
Is it because it's privatized and this private company doesn't care who works for them? Like, I don't understand the rationale behind this.
So this is what the podcast was talking about and literally making fun of us in BC for. Was like, how weird is it that we have a system where the people ruling on the death are literally not trained in anything to do with medicine or people or death? So, and I can... you know, in my experience too, in BC. So I did job shadows for coroner service when I was in my early 20s. And so I applied, and I had applied to work there, I think maybe after I finished my bachelor's, but I don't think you needed the bachelor's to do it. So I could have gone into that and had almost no experience. And it's not great paying, right? It's like, it's fascinating when you learn those things about BC, right? And then you also learn that Bonnie Henry has also worked very closely with coroner's offices in doing the excess data, in doing the heat dome deaths. And it really does beg for me the question that, given the fact we've seen so many people just want to blindly follow what Queen Henry has said, you give us a bunch of people who have no training in medicine, and what, and she just tells them, like, well, no, that, you know, that wouldn't be associated with it, or blah, blah, blah. Like, any of these weird things we've heard her say, why wouldn't the coroner believe our chief medical health officer and follow whatever she says about the deaths? Because that's a reasonable thing you'd think you could do. Well, and there's no accountability
right that's now. Why.
That is what we're seeing, right, is that and this is not just BC. This is happening right across Canada. And none of us presume to say that, like, any of our issues are singular to the provinces that we're having. And it's happened across different types of government, because it's a power differential, right? And it's a class struggle, and it's a race struggle, and it's all the intersections that we've talked about all play into this. And And we saw the disabled community often get left behind, even with COVID, right? That once many groups had the opportunity or the chance to sort of feel like they just stopped doing these things, right? So we saw Pride come, and there were many people that came out of that, you know, from the disabled community saying Pride wasn't safe for us again this year because nobody was taking those measures anymore that they were willing to take before. Yeah, so I mean, with the hospital data, we know it's out there now, which is good. I'm hoping that this will provide an avenue for pushing Horgan and Dix at this point, you know, but even just providing the data to people right now, because I don't foresee that the closures are going to get easier in the next little bit or that they're going to get less frequent, particularly if even our hopium-based minister and stuff are saying now blatantly that we're going to have a fall wave and more things happening. I can't imagine the hospital closures are going to get much better. We saw 14 ferry cancellations today.
What? 14? We're at 14 now? Wow.
14 today because of staffing shortages. You know, and I saw someone argue on the page. They're like, well, it's because they fired the unvaccinated staff. And I was like, yo, they hired them back weeks ago. Like... This is not the issue.
No. I just can't imagine.
Chronic shortages, yeah. You know. We started this sort of dance with Omicron months ago, right? And people are starting to see long COVID poke out. And people are starting to see, like, there's a lot of workplaces with people that are still sick. Or that are still sort of rotating sickness in and out. And it is becoming more and more obvious, and I do think that's why we've seen more of a push for the fourth dose than I expected, at least publicly, because a lot of the citizens have taken that on across the provinces in terms of, like, really pushing for that fourth dose, at least the opportunity for it, given that the indicators, and even if we look at BC, right, the wastewater surveillance is starting to go up. The hospitalizations are going up. We don't have accurate case data, so it's hard to actually say anything from the case data, right? But the indicators we do have seem to suggest that something funky's going on, and since we don't have any protection measures, it's unlikely to think it's magically going to go down. We've had that conversation before, right?
Yeah. The pandemic just doesn't stop on its own. Like, we have to actually do something physically to stop it. Well, if we want this to stop.
It's so funny because they hated the language of waves, right? Like, Henry really didn't like using the language of waves. But then they completely are now leaning into it, because then that makes it seem like it's not this constant, right? Because this whole push for being endemic was based on this idea of seasonality, that it would sort of come and go. So then by really, you know, reinforcing this wave statement, it seems to suggest, well, yeah, we're sort of having these rises of it. But in actuality, the plateau we're at when that starts is way too high.
Yeah, the plateau is that we've never stopped being in a pandemic. We have never stopped. The plateau is
that we still have 5 dead a day, right?
Yeah.
It used to be 0 a year ago.
Yeah.
Right? And if it just keeps creeping up over time, math, you know, I really struggle with people that seem to think it's just going to stop. I don't understand. And let alone all the sort of findings about those immune system problems, right? Like, God knows if we have rolling waves, what that's actually going to mean.
It's almost like they want to see what's going to happen, to see how bad it's going to get. Like, I don't understand why there's not more of a collective effort for them to try to mitigate, you know, what's happening right now.
You enjoy and foster critical thinking in yourself and a growth mentality. That's not what the common population does, right? And I'm not saying that in sort of a rude way. I mean that in a genuine sort of psychological way, from that perspective, is that when it comes to cognitive dissonance, right, Mel, most people are going to change their thoughts to match their behavior, and they want to be socializing. They want to be doing these things right now. So
they excuse it in any way they can. And then we see those conflicts that happen where, you know, someone's yelling in my face about a mask. It's not really about me wearing the mask, right? It's what it potentially says about them, right? If they're wrong, it means a whole lot about them, right? It's easy to just say that we're wrong and we're just conspiracy theorists, or we're just too worried, or we're anxious, because that's a lot easier to mentally deal with and psychologically deal with than you're maybe taking risks that could kill vulnerable people, which is what we say to them, right?
And how dare we insult their intelligence or their, you know, morality by suggesting otherwise, you know?
Right, because it induces that shame feeling, right? If you're saying that I'm wrong, then what I'm doing is wrong, right? Then that sense of shame creeps in. And that's why a lot of the sort of, you know, a lot of the psychological theories and sort of strategies for minimizing that distance between people with that division right now is about closing that distance, right? About finding the commonality there and sort of broaching it with people that way versus the way of just laying it out straight. Because when we invoke that shame in people, they often withdraw from the conversation instead of leaning into it. So you try and foster curiosity. You try and foster, you know, those sorts of questions that are non-threatening. And strategically, absolutely, that's the best way, but that's exhausting, right? It's exhausting to have to carry the burden of educating people that are trying to potentially kill you in that moment, whether intentionally or not, right?
And they feel all that, but they're not even conscious of it, right? They're not conscious of that. Everything that you articulated, they can't articulate that.
No, because most people don't spend their time thinking about this, right? Most people avoid discomfort, yes. Right? People don't like discomfort. They don't like challenging themselves. We like to live in an insulated world, which is why social media has been such a destructive force, right? Is because it's leaned into that tendency that we have to want to be social, to want to be part of that group, and in effect has actually caused more problems because of it.
Interesting discussion, because this can completely apply to convoy people. The visceral response that we continue to receive from people for masking or saying, hey, COVID is airborne, it's not over, right?
Right. Well, the threat is becoming more obvious, right? Yeah. And that's why it's becoming more emotional right now, is because the threat is higher, right? Because now not only are we saying that the situation is bad, but Dix is up there saying the pandemic is not over. People are out there talking about masks, right? It's not it's not necessarily that they're only getting one view, but they can hear that there are streams of other things coming through that say it's not over. And that increases the threat, right? As more people are validating that point, they're like, oh no, right? The panic increases. I can't be wrong. Because if I'm wrong, what does that mean about me and all those things, right? Mm-hmm. So it's going to be an exceptionally challenging thing, right? And the thing I worry for, and I've said this a few times, is that if we get to a place where they feel they have to re-implement mask mandates, I worry what will happen.
Well, you're going to have the extreme reaction. You're going to get an extreme reaction.
We already have this sort of incel Trumpian mentality that has been sort of bordering us, right, in Canada. And we've seen an increase in that. We saw, you know, an 18-year-old Canadian boy plan to you know, shoot up a pride event in Ontario this year. We are not without these instances of these things happening. And I do worry that will become an avenue for that extremism to come out, even if not here, at least in the United States, and will likely, you know, spread here as well, as it always does.
And it's all, you know, has to do with the total climate of everything. And that includes, you know, how our summers are hotter than ever. There's, you know, people are generally right to be freaking out about climate change. Because, I mean, look at what's happening in Europe right now. They have a heat dome over their entire continent right now.
Well, not only that, but you see it highlighted beside the things like Joe Manchin not voting for the climate-based things today in the United States, right?
Yes.
That we have this juxtaposition again with not only COVID, but every other crisis, mm-hmm. that we have these things, that actions that we all see we could take, but these very few limited people in power are holding us from being allowed to do so. And it's so demoralizing, right? It's so outrageous to feel like you're in that place every day, that everything is there for the right thing to happen, but it's those people in the way of doing it. And those are the people that are supposed to do the most for the most vulnerable.
Did you hear that, France? Macron asked for a registration list for vulnerable people during the heat dome so that they can be checked on and make sure their homes are cool enough, so he doesn't want to have anyone left behind during this heat crisis.
Yeah, I literally don't know anything happened between last year and this year in BC. Do you know of anything other than like the heat dome report that happened?
Well,
anything they actually changed?
Our alert system now works. Right? Our alert system now works for our phones. So yay for that. You know, but
right.
It should be used appropriately.
Which they've tested twice, I believe, but not actually used, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know, Mel. I don't know. It is a hard place. I mean, I'm in a good place where I find I'm feeling very motivated to act right now, right? And I found this data website helpful with it. But I have had times, right, especially in 2020, I found where I'm just tired, right? It's hard. It's hard to keep hearing different excuses for the same things that we've watched over and over and over again. And I know why people feel like that. And I have my moments with that, too. But gosh, do we just keep pushing, right? Because they're not going to stop not caring. So we have to keep caring, right? There's no other alternative.
Yeah. They purposely made the data difficult to find in one place, right? They weren't expecting someone like you to come around and be this articulate, be this good, right? And find all the data and just notifying everyone, hey, we have an issue here in the interior, right? And thank goodness CBC picked it up.
Well, and I've tried to keep it, you know, the website neutral. Like, it's data. That's all it is. That every page on there is data. And it's all their publicly available data, but not easily found, right? It's aggregated all the stuff that they're letting out there that does show a picture, even if vague. But they don't do it in such a way that you can even see that when they do it. But it's hard. And I've noticed that with this one versus the safe school masks or the masking for stores one that I did, is there's been a lot less sort of extreme reactions to this one. And I think because it's hard for people to have an extreme reaction. It's literally just reporting the data that they have, right? And I'm just so appreciative that for this story that I did with CBC, that they verified all this sort of hospital information, because that will be really helpful for people, you know, as they're looking at the other data to know, like, I'm pulling it from all the regular public resources, right? Like, this is the information we have. It's just, you can read it now.
Yeah, people can understand it and see it in a linear way.
Well, and that's what they hate, right? Because yeah. I was in the situation report tonight and I'm just like, they take just completely random data points and compare it to it just to make it always look better. Like, they'll be like, And this month, compared to May 2021, was 12% lower. And this one, compared to January 2020, is 15%. And it just makes no sense, right? So to be able to aggregate in a way where you can actually see the function of it over time, I think is necessary at this point. And we are this many years in, right? There's no reason for them to not be providing this. And it's already difficult for many to navigate the systems and the medical systems. So they should be providing things like this to make it easier and inclusive for those that need to access the services.
Absolutely.
I gotta say though, Mel, I'm starting to lose my voice, so I think I'm gonna need to sign off for the night.
All right. Let's wrap it up and we'll say thank you to everyone and say good night from Project Canary.
Yeah, and if anyone has any questions they want answered or anything they want to chat about, feel free to message Mel or I, and we'll definitely get back to you. I'll probably be back next weekend. Things have slowed down a little bit, so I'm feeling a bit better in a headspace for the Twitter spaces again.
Yay. All right.
Yeah, so thanks for coming, and we'll see you next week.
Until next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Oh, thank you.